What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number two of Darren Donick and Chase. Darren McFarland finishing up vacation. He'll be back with us on Monday. Coming up a little bit later in the show, we've got You Just Made the List. We'll have a chance for prizes on that. At 12:30, Dale Jarrett, NASCAR legend, will join us. And that will be a great conversation you're going to hear. And then it'll be Friday afternoon trivia. 4th of July style. Start your holiday weekend right. Remember, be safe, and, you know, we won't even get into, you know, don't, you know, wear the mask, all of that stuff. That goes without saying at this point. So have fun, but do it right, and do it right by starting off with participation in our trivia contest. That's coming up at 1 o'clock for prizes. We're going to have a lot of fun for that. So we're going to give away a lot of stuff with You Just Made the List and also trivia. Later this hour, we're going to get your wheels turning a little bit with some hilarious sports stats, crazy, mind-blowing sports stats that were tweeted out earlier this week. We're going to share some and then give it a local flavor. That's going to be a fun topic later this hour. But we're going to start it off with a conversation with Chris Broussard from FS1. And we hit on a lot of different topics. We just told you about it to lead into it. So without further ado, if you missed this yesterday, you're going to want to hear this very compelling discussion. Chris Broussard, FS1. Chris Broussard joins us from FS1. Glad to have him with us. Chris, welcome to the show.
It's great to be on with you guys. How are you?
Well, we're doing well. We're hanging in there, and we've got our fingers crossed as we see these, you know, numbers every day. We're so, you know, craving competition. So just let's start off with a question. Where are you in terms of your mindset of how well the NBA is coming along with executing, getting everybody in the bubble and getting started down there?
Well, I think they're doing an excellent job, you know, considering the circumstances. I mean, it seems like they have a plan that is about as good as you could have in this situation. They've been understanding also of the players that don't want to play for whatever reason. They're giving the teams many options to add other players. So, and they've taken their time. You know, there was, when they initially announced that they would start games July 30th, there was a segment of people out there that felt like, why are you waiting so long? But I think as time has gone on, that you've seen that was kind of wise, because several players have had it already, you know, and have it currently. It also gives you plenty of time to get your players in shape. It's a slow rollout where players are going to the facilities individually, then they can start going in smaller groups, then they can go as a full team, and then practice. You know, like, they're taking the steps that, you know, seem to be wise in this situation. So if for some reason they're not able to play or even to finish a season, then you can't blame the NBA, because I do think that they have done just about everything they can to try to get this thing rolling.
Chris, we could take this in so many different directions, but I thought of one. I was just looking at some of the things that you've been discussing here recently, and I 100% agree with you. You know, of course, Penny Hardaway is sort of back in the spotlight now, coaching over at Memphis, and, you know, here we are in Nashville. You know, he was obviously a high school legend in Memphis. I was fortunate enough to play against him
right
when I was at Vanderbilt, and he was at Memphis State. But I agree.
How'd you do?
They beat us twice.
How'd you
they
do
beat
again?
Us twice. I didn't do very well. Let's just say when I was in the game, Chris, we zoned. We went zoned. There was no way that I was going to match up against him if there was any way around it. But man, what an amazing player! But I some of these old games that come on, the classics. You know, I'm always flipping through the channels and see if there's a game that grabs you. And there were some great games from his early Magic days where, you know, he's been kind of a forgotten man for a while, because he kind of disappeared when the injuries hit. But he was at one time, on his way to some tremendous things.
Oh, I mean, Penny Hardaway, look, assuming he would have, had he stayed healthy, I think it's safe for most of us to assume he would have been a Hall of Famer. You know, I mean, he was on that trajectory. He had been to the finals very early in his career. You know, obviously losing Shaq. And I talked to Shaq. I asked Shaq. Now, remember, Shaq played with Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, Steve Nash, LeBron James. And I asked Shaq, of all the guys you played with, who would, if you could go back, like, which guy would you play and stick with, that you stayed with? And he said Penny. And they were a tremendous team together because, obviously, Penny was a great passer. And they could have been like a turbo version of a Magic and Kareem. Even maybe, it's crazy to say better, but the fact that they were both roughly the same age and they would have been in their primes together, whereas Kareem obviously was much older than Magic. So Penny was outstanding. And I think, because you mentioned he kind of was a forgotten man after he got hurt, I think that a big part of it too is that after he came back from the knee injuries, he played many years. You know, he played darn near, seven, eight seasons after the knee injury, and he wasn't the same. And a lot of times people remember him as that player who was pretty good, but obviously not a star anymore. And that can eat you, that can hurt you more than if you just, you're outstanding, then you get hurt and you can't play anymore. Then people will remember, oh, but he was awesome back in the day before he got hurt. But now they kind of remember all these other years where he was just a pretty good player. I think Vince Carter, I was debating, you mentioned my show, The Odd Couple. Rob Parker and I were debating about this. Is Vince Carter a Hall of Famer? And I said yes, and Rob was saying no. And most of our callers said no. And I think a big part of it is Vince Carter played 22 seasons. And he was a superstar for like 11 seasons. And then after that, he kind of started going down and down and down. And there's a whole group of people now that remember him just as this role player or this guy that came off the bench and shot three. So that can often hurt you when people – I think Derrick Rose will fall victim to the same thing. Grant Hill fell victim to the same thing. And so I think that's part of why people don't really understand how great Penny was.
We're talking to Chris Broussard of FS1. And I want to ask you about a documentary that you were a part of, Backstory, about the LeBron James decision. And, it was a great documentary. But I still always think in the back of my mind that what if, and we played that an hour ago, of what if LeBron would have signed with the Knicks instead of signing to the Miami Heat, and how that would have turned out. Obviously, it didn't because, James Dolan doesn't know how to handle meetings correctly. But LeBron made his decision and went to Miami. But what would that decision been like if he did go to the Knicks?
Oh, wow. Well, look, they obviously would have been a contender. Because everywhere LeBron goes, they are a contender. The question of whether or not they would have won championships really depends on who else they would have been able to get there. And we've seen LeBron recruit, and sometimes he's been successful. Sometimes he hasn't been able to get guys with him. So it would have been a renaissance in New York basketball. They would have been one of the top couple of teams, a few teams in the league. They would have made finals, I believe. But would they have won championships? That's the question. And again, that's probably based on what would have been around him. And here's another thing is this. If he had gone to New York, I don't think Kevin Durant would have went to Golden State. And so that would have opened up other opportunities for LeBron to win. Because I really don't think Durant would have considered. I don't even think, honestly, it would have even crossed his mind to go to Golden State if LeBron had not first gone to Miami. Because in principle, the moves were very similar. Durant's was different, you know, more, that team was set. There was no question, you know, he was joining the championship team already that had won 73 games. But still, LeBron was going to a team that was stacked, that was going to be the most talented team in the league. And so with him doing that, I think that's when the seed was planted in other players that, man, I can do that? You know, really? I could actually do that? And so I don't think Draymond Green would have thought about calling Durant and saying, hey, man, you need to come play with us. Because it just I just don't think it was entering players' minds to team up like that with super teams. And so really, whether or not the Knicks would have won a championship, the whole last, you know, what, 10 years of basketball would have been different, very different, had LeBron gone to the Knicks, stayed in Cleveland, or gone to another team where it would not have been this super team. It would have just been him trying to win a championship with whatever pieces they have.
Yeah, and I want to go back to LeBron's influence after this, but this is kind of what I threw out there with the Knicks, because obviously, you know, the LeBron James thing didn't happen, so they kind of went for that sign-and-trade deal with Amari Stoudemire, and then later on in that season, they traded for Carmelo Anthony and Chauncey Billups. So I'm thinking, could you make a big three with – you sign LeBron James for the same amount of money he went to the Heat. Amari Stoudemire, I think his deal was $99 million, which is a little less than what Chris Bosh was making. And then Melo at the time was still making around that $18, $19 million range. So I'm thinking if you can put those three together alongside Chauncey Billups, would that have been enough for them to get over the hump in that first NBA Finals? You know what I mean?
I mean, that's asking a lot, first of all, because, you know, who knows how – I don't remember exactly how the money would have worked out, because remember how many pieces they had to give up.
Yeah, absolutely. Wilson Chandler, Gallinari.
Well, I don't recall if they would have even been able to put all three of those players, four of those players with Billups together. But to hypothetically speaking, I mean, yeah, that would have been the championship team. LeBron and Melo would have been great together, because Melo, I think LeBron would have just been able to feed him, and Melo would have been that, could have been the closer. He could have been like the Kyrie, really, to LeBron, you know, doing what he does. Amari, who was tremendous early on in his tenure in New York, and then kind of faded as injuries kind of took away some of his game. And then Chauncey was a great leader. Now, Chauncey, it would have been interesting how they would have played, because Chauncey obviously was a guy with the ball in his hands as a point guard. So that would have been an adjustment. But Chauncey also was a guy that was a great shooter. So I think it would have worked out. And he was a leader as well. So, yeah, if they could have gotten a foursome like that together again, huge if, then, yeah, I think they would have won championships.
Yeah, you know, at this point, Chris, we're playing hypotheticals all through the radio and all through TV, because that's all we got at this point. So,
that's what we have.
That's pretty much all we have. So that's why I threw it out there, because I looked at that Heat roster and I looked at it as, okay, so you had Wade, you had LeBron, and you had Bosh, and then their fourth best option was Mike Bibby at that point. And so I'm thinking, okay, Mike Bibby a better option, or who's a better option, Billups or Bibby? And I went with, you know, Billups. And then who's a better option between Bosh and Amari Stoudemire? And obviously a healthy Amari Stoudemire in his prime was, you know, a beast. And then I looked at Wade and Melo, right, and I'm like, well, Wade's a better all-around player, but Melo is one of the most underrated scorers in the league. So that's kind of how I came up with that hypothetical.
Well, Melo would have fit better with LeBron, because Wade and LeBron, defensively, they were a great fit, obviously. Offensively, though, it was tough, because their games were similar, their styles of play. Wade had the ball in his hands a lot, too. And so when they started winning championships that second year on, Wade had to back up and say, okay, look, I'm going to give up, sacrifice some of my game offensively so we can run through LeBron and he can be his best, and then we can be, you know, win championships. So Melo would not have had to do that as much because, again, he could be more of a guy that could catch and shoot, you know, and things like that. So I think those two they probably would have fit together better. They wouldn't have been as good defensively, but offensively, they probably would have fit together better than Wade and LeBron.
Yeah, and before I toss it to Chase, I do want to talk about LeBron's influence on, because we see now, especially even with college athletes, a lot of players now speaking out, having their own voices, and obviously the decision was the start of it. I kind of consider the decision like a sacrifice for LeBron James, because it made him realize that some of the people around in my camp maybe is not for my best interest, and that's when Rich Paul steps in, that's when Maverick Carter steps in, and then they built this huge, you know, media entity where they give players an opportunity to have their own voices. So just talk about LeBron's influence in, you know, just giving athletes a voice, giving athletes that platform to kind of speak for themselves rather than, you know, let other people speak for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, what LeBron has done has been tremendous as far as the impact that he's had on the league, on sports as a whole, off the court. And what players are doing, you see more. I mean, Kevin Durant, you look at the great things he's doing with his boardroom show and you know, Silicon Valley and things like that. He's basically following in LeBron's footsteps. Even, you know, I mentioned how he went to Golden State, which I thought was following in LeBron's footsteps. But even with the stuff he's doing off the court, business-wise, very similar. And other players are doing, you know, Steph Curry has, you know, a media company, and Kyrie Irving is putting one together. Like, a lot of these guys are seeing the possibilities and how they can use their celebrity and their wealth that they gain as players to really do a lot of other things they want to do outside of basketball, but also that create jobs for people and give voices to people. You know, now LeBron is, you know, on uninterrupted with athletes, but just he and Maverick Carter just started a media company where they're going to be showing, you know, creating content from, you know, minority communities that really haven't had a voice or as much of a voice as they should have in the past. So I think it's tremendous, his impact. And you said it, like, the social issues as well. I would say it started back in, I believe it was 2012, when he and his Miami Heat teammates wore the hoodies with the Trayvon Martin situation. And that is what really kind of began the current athletes speaking out on social issues, because to that point, they really hadn't, you know, for a long time, athletes had not really spoken out. And so now, as you said, you see it in football, in baseball, in basketball, in college sports. So LeBron definitely does deserve a lot of credit for kind of sparking that. And I think some other athletes have even taken it. Some of these college athletes, I mean, they're putting real sacrifice into this because they don't have the multi-million-dollar contracts. They don't have the endorsement dollars that some of these pro athletes have. Many of them won't even make it to the pros, and yet they're still taking stands when their college scholarship could be taken away. And so a lot of these guys have really taken it to a high level, and LeBron was definitely the recent start of all of this.
Chris Broussard from FS1 is here with us. And along those lines, I believe that we have seen, too, just players in general, whether it's collegiate players or professional players, through all of this, whether it's COVID-19 or Black Lives Matter, anything going on in our country, I feel like that they are all realizing what we all have in the media for a long time of just how big their voice is. And I think this can be a very good thing for society if they continue to use it like we've heard lately.
Man, I've said it for years that, and this isn't, you know, I don't think this is the way it should be, but this is the way it is. Black athletes, I believe, have more power to make change in this society than any other group of African Americans, including politicians. And I really mean that from the bottom of my heart, because their wealth, their connections to corporate America through endorsements or just people in corporate America wanting to, you know, be in their life and get to know them and things like that, their influence within society, and the fact that they're irreplaceable. LeBron James is irreplaceable. If LeBron James had done what Colin Kaepernick did, he wouldn't be out of the league. You know, it would have become a trend. like he Colin Kaepernick, I actually thought showed Colin was more courageous than a lot of people even gave him credit for, because when he started kneeling, he was expendable. Like the 49ers could have cut him that season when he started kneeling, and nobody really would have thought twice about it because he was a backup. He wasn't a star anymore. But had, you know, a star, Russell Wilson, a Patrick Mahomes, a LeBron, somebody like that, if they did that, they are not out of the league for a week, for a day. The league would figure out how to work around it. And that's the power that they have. I'll take it a step further. I've said it for the longest. If the African-American players in the NFL, just them, but if white players joined in too, great. But if they decide, if they said to the league, we're not playing until Colin Kaepernick's on the roster. He deserves to be on the roster, clearly. We see some of these other guys, Nathan Peterman, and so on and so forth, who are on rosters that are not better than Kaepernick. He should be on the roster. We're not playing until that happens. I don't think they miss a game. A team would sign him, period. And that's the type of power that they have. Remember a few years ago in 2015, I believe it was, when the athletes from the University of Missouri, the president and the chancellor, the students have been trying to get them to react to different racial things that had gone on campus, and they weren't doing it. They have been trying for weeks, if not months. The football players say, we're not playing until this is dealt with. Within 3 days, the president and chancellor were gone. That, and these are college athletes at Missouri, which is not a football powerhouse. That's the power that they have. And I even look at, and I said this on the radio last week, you look at the name Redskins, and I'm not Native American. I don't know all the history. I don't know what is and isn't offensive, but I do know that the leaders of Native Americans say it's offensive. They say it's a racial slur. The dictionary says it's a racial slur. And so I said, I think the black athletes should say they're not playing for the Redskins until that name is changed. I bet you they wouldn't miss a game. I bet you they wouldn't miss a week of practice. That's the power that they have. And I would say, as we're talking about Black Lives Matter and all of that, if we really are moving away from racism and trying to get past racism, it's not just blacks who've suffered. It's also Native Americans in this country. And they don't have the numbers or the power that we have in society. And so if we're really moving ahead, you know, we're getting rid of Aunt Jemima and, you know, Uncle Ben and all these Confederate statues, let's get rid of the Redskins names and any of the other ones that are offensive to Native Americans as well, even though they're not black, but we're pulling down racism, and they're victims of that as well.
Boy, Chris, you have given us a lot to discuss. A tremendous conversation. Thank you so much for your time today, and best of luck with all of your projects at FS1, and we'll keep our fingers crossed in the short term as well that we can start seeing some round ball here very soon.
Right. All right, guys. I enjoyed it. Anytime
you need me, let me know. Welcome back. It's Aaron Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A lot coming on the show. You just made the list at noon. Trivia at 1. Questions being put together as we speak.
Right,
you can
ready.
Win prizes in both. Yes, we are ready to go. And to get your brain waves going, in just a moment, we're going to introduce something that Peter Burns put out. We just had Peter on the show a couple weeks ago before he put this in there. But he did a tweet that just got everybody going. A lot of really famous people weighed in on it. A lot of people that we know and a lot of national names. And that is, what is your favorite random sports stat that blows your mind every time you see it? We're going to have some fun with that. We're going to get the text line going if you want to partake in it. He got like thousands of responses on here, and it got our our minds working to try to come up with a local angle on some of this, because the category is really endless. But one thing I want to, I hope you got a chance to hear the Chris Broussard interview. That was so much fun that we had with him yesterday. And one of the last things he hit was the Redskins issue. And this is maybe one of the more noteworthy stories of the day as we go into a holiday weekend. Usually it's a light news week, of course, but the Redskins are going to look at it, right? They're doing a little internal discussion. Obviously, there's a lot of sponsors that are putting pressure on them. But Chris Broussard, before this story came out, because we had this interview yesterday, he said that he believes that if players stepped up and demanded that it happen and said, we're not playing until you do something, that they wouldn't miss a week of practice, that they would not miss a game. I tend to agree.
Oh, I do too. I think it shows you the power that the players have. And sometimes they know that, and sometimes they have to remind themselves or be reminded that they have that kind of voice and that kind of power, because they do. And he used Colin Kaepernick as an example of if they wanted him back in the league, that the players could make that happen. The same with the name change of the Redskins. I was just reading, we know that the Redskins issued a statement that they're going to review the name. I saw this, Adam Schefter saying the change of Redskins name is now considered likely. I mean, they don't go through a review and come back and say, yeah, we're keeping the name. I just don't see that happening. I believe this is it. It's actually going to happen. They're going to be Washington something different. I don't know if that means starting this year or next year, what that means, but I do believe it's going to happen at some point. But it just shows you the power that people have.
Okay, on to the fun stuff here. Peter Burns got it going just by throwing out, I don't know what prompted him to do this, but the first response he got was from Buster Olney. Keith Olbermann weighed in on it. Jason Stark's in there. I mean, they just keep going. ESPN, yeah. Stats and Info, and it just goes right on down the line. I think it probably was inspired by Bobby Bonilla Day, which we covered heavily the other day. But I started thinking of some local ones that I always pop into my mind when you get to this stuff. But what came to mind for you? Because let's just take, for example, Buster Olney starts it off. Stan Musial had 3,630 hits in his career. 1,815 at home and 1,815 on the road. Now, wow. That is a mind blower, right? This is so we can just go on forever with this stuff. Jason Stark, Adam Dunn home runs for a 4-year stretch from 2005 to 2008. 40, 40, 40, and 40. Exactly 40 for 4 straight years. And then almost topping it, because this might even be tougher to do. Chris Davis, not the Chris Davis who is setting records for striking out for the Orioles, who once was a great power hitter, but the Chris Davis who briefly played for the Sounds, that plays for the Oakland A's, hit exactly 247 for 4 straight years between 2015 and 2018. Now, what are the odds of that? That's got to be tougher than getting struck by lightning.
I know. Yeah, some of these,
and it only unfolds from there, right? There's some bizarre things that were brought up, but did you guys come up with some that you didn't necessarily see on this list?
Well, let me read one. Steve Levy's. Did you see that one?
I didn't.
If Wayne Gretzky never scored a single goal, he'd still be the NHL's all-time leading scorer. When you take his points,
unbelievable. I can remember talking about that with Pete Weber. When the Predators first came in the league, and we were doing some things along those lines to try to introduce people to hockey and the dominating nature of Wayne Gretzky, that is absolutely mind-blowing. Because, oh, by the way, he is by far the game's all-time leading goal scorer, right? Alexander Ovechkin is getting into the neighborhood here as he continues to climb. He's still got a ways to go to catch him. But Wayne Gretzky is the all-time leading goal scorer. But if you took away every one of those goals, he's still the all-time leading scorer because he dished out so many assists. He had some 200-point seasons, right? I mean, that's phenomenal.
Travis Haney, our buddy that, you know, used to live here, now working with Will Healy in Charlotte, he said in 2017, Austin Peay football went from one win in 48 games to winning 8 of its next 10. That's what he responded to Peter Burns.
Yeah. And snapped their streak. They had like a 28 or 29 game losing streak that they snapped by winning like 69-13. Like, blew that team out.
That was impressive. All right, so what comes to mind for you guys? So Elijah, we'll start with you. I know you you went down a rabbit hole with this.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, yeah. Once you get into that Twitter thread, you don't ever get out. But the one that comes to my mind every time is that Larry Fitzgerald, who got drafted in like what, 2003, 2004, has more tackles in his career than dropped passes, and that might be my favorite. Might be my favorite one. That's a really good one. And then another one,
more
that
tackles than drop passes.
More
so,
tackles.
So tackling people on like interceptions.
Uh huh. He has more tackles than drop passes in his entire career. And he's played for like a decade and a half, which is insane. And then another one that I learned yesterday when going through this this thread was that more people have walked on the moon, which is 12, than men who have scored against Mariano Rivera in the postseason, which is 11. And Mariano Rivera pitched in like 96 postseason games.
Wow. Huh.
So it's like when you put it like that, when you just say, yeah, that Mariano is awesome. Rivera has only given up 11 runs in the postseason. Well, more men have walked on the moon than that amount of runs.
That's crazy. This is one that, see, I'm not like a stat guy like you guys are. So I've had trouble thinking of something that just really comes to mind of one that, I mean, one that always blows my mind is that Brett Favre's first completed pass was to himself. You know, that's one of those trivia questions that I like. But I did see this in reading through all of it. One that's near and dear to my heart. Greg Maddux faced 20,421 batters during his career, and only 310 of them saw a 3-0 count. 177 of those were intentional walks.
It's insane.
Isn't that crazy, Willie?
I think we're definitely getting around this all, everything we were going to put out there is pretty insane. This is good stuff.
But 615-737-1025.
I have two. Yeah, let's get the text line going here. And if you want to call in, that's fine too. Call or text 615-737-1025. Mind-blowing stats to get you into the holiday weekend here as we continue to be patient and await, hopefully, some new games that we can sink our teeth into. All right, here's a couple for me with the local tie. This one still blows my mind. It's going to sting just bringing this up again. And we've referred to it many times. But the Titans and their game against the Ravens, the divisional playoff in the 2000 season, January 7th of 2001. Titans, of course, 13-3 against the Ravens, who were the wild card. But you could argue these were the two best teams in football, really, when you get down to it. Certainly the two best defenses in football. The Titans in that game allowed 6 first downs, 6 in the game. They allowed a total of 134 yards of offense to the Ravens. The Ravens had the ball for 19 minutes and 31 seconds. The Titans had the ball for 40 minutes and 29 seconds. The Titans blocked 2 punts in the game and lost by 14 points. Now that is a bizarre set of stats right there.
What are the odds a team loses like that? There's no way that a team outgains the team like that in a football game at any level and still ends up winning by more than one possession. Like, that's such an anomaly.
You would think that if they lost that game, it would be 10-9. But, of course, when you have a field goal blocked that turns into a touchdown, right? So instead of you going up 13-10, which is the fateful play of the game, you know, early in the fourth quarter, I think it might have been the first play of the fourth quarter, you know, the field goal gets blocked and it gets run back for a touchdown. And then on the next possession, you throw a pass that gets deflected in and out of the hands of Eddie George and gets picked off for Ray Lewis for a touchdown. So instantly, there were 2 touchdowns scored by Baltimore. That's how it happens. But Elijah, you like to do things like win probability. I would love to see what the win probability of a team that has those numbers. Six first downs, 134 yards, gets two punts blocked.
Oh, that has to be on Football Reference
somewhere.
And
has the ball for 19 minutes and 30.
Yeah, that has to be documented somewhere.
You think it's in there?
It might be. I'll check the box score from that game.
Here's one for you.
Okay. Yeah, if you can find that, I would like to know.
Here's one for you guys. So, Prince Fielder, former Nashville Sound Brewer, had 319 career home runs. Do you know how many career home runs his father, Cecil, had?
Cecil.
Cecil Fielder also had 319 career home runs.
That is pretty awesome.
The former Sound, Prince Fielder.
I got another local one for you. By the way, 737-1025 if you want to weigh in with your favorite mind-blowing sports stat. Here's one that that has come up during this time because it was documented in an interview at a piece that Mitch Light put together for The Athletic recalling senior night for Shane Foster back in, let's see, let me check the date on this, but this was back in 2008, I believe. But he had the 42 points. And in that game, he hit his last nine threes. Every one of them was essential, right? As the Commodores were coming from behind, they ended up winning it in overtime on the last of the nine shots that he hit from three. In that game, he was 16 of 25 from the field, and he hit his last nine threes. He actually missed his first six threes in that game. He was 0 for 6 at one point to start the game from three. Ended up by hitting nine in a row. Now, that is a mind-blowing stat. You start off 0 for 6 from three, and you end up with 42.
Yeah, that is a mind-blowing one. Here's one that we haven't mentioned, and I hope this doesn't hurt you too much to bring it up, but it is one that is a local, you know, of local interest. Up until last year, Vanderbilt was one of three teams to make a three-pointer since the three-point line was instituted in the NCAA. So they snapped a 34-year streak last year, and now there are only two teams, UNLV and Princeton, to be the only teams to consecutively make a three-pointer since it was invented or added in college basketball.
You had to bring that up, did you?
I know, I'm sorry.
Is that, I mean, really?
But it is a mind-blowing stat that the three.
Oh, it is a mind-blowing stat. Jerry Stackhouse, it was so interesting after that game, after that happened this year, and of course it was against Tennessee, right, that it happened. So it was a double whammy. The fans were extremely disappointed. And of course, this being Jerry Stackhouse's first year, I don't think he really at the moment understood the depth of what happened right after the game. He hadn't processed it. How much that meant to a lot of the fans. He was thinking, God, he couldn't believe how much the fans were going, just shoot the three. You know, he was like, I need my guys to play. We're trying to get better. I can't just tell them shoot a three every single time. But a lot of the fans were like, yeah, forget all that. Just launch one until you make one. You know, we got to keep this thing going.
Right. Yeah, that was I guess I was in Kansas City when that happened, because that was around the AFC Championship game. Because I remember being with...
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's get the text line going. If you've got famous or just special to you, mind-blowing stats, that every time you see it, you just say, wow. 737-1025. Jump on the line if you want to call, or text Chase, or the text line, if you will, the official show text line. Chase is in charge of it today. And we will read them off on the air. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Coming up at noon will be You Just Made the List. In the meantime, text in or call in your favorite mind-blowing stats. Peter Burns from ESPN, who we had on the show recently, does a lot of work for the SEC Network, put this out there and got an amazing response on Twitter. But, of course, this is endless. And if you've got a local angle, it's even better. But jump on in and let us know what you think. I think we've got a caller on hold to get it started here.
We do.
Is Mark from Franklin still out there? Let's go to Mark. Mark, what's your mind-blowing stat?
Wilt Chamberlain, 100 points in a game and still averaging 50 points a game in a season.
50 points a game in a season is incredible. There's no question about it.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then, you mentioned the 100-point game. Appreciate it, Mark.
I think it was the same season, right, that he averaged 50?
He averaged like 37 rebounds a game that year, too.
I know.
It was in the 30s.
It's absurd how many. Yeah, it was incredible. But 50 points a game, averaging 50 points a game, imagine that, what it would take to do that in this day and age. And let's say there's people putting up a lot of points, but nothing close to 50 a game.
No three-point line. Yeah, no three-point line back then either.
Yes. Wilt the stilt. So all right, Chase, what do we got on the text line? We got anything?
We'll get to that in just a second, but I have another one I want to throw out. And I know it's not necessarily a stat, but this is one that the last couple of years has always been mind-blowing to me. So you would remember this game, November 18th, 1985, Joe Theismann, he gets hurt, he breaks his leg with the hit from Lawrence Taylor. But did you realize, and I think you realized that the date was the same, that Alex Smith, 33 years later, it happened on the same date, okay? So November 18th, 2018. But there's more. In that, with Theismann's injury, the game ended 23-21 with a Redskins win over the Giants. So the final score was 23-21. When Smith got hurt, the final score was 23-21. The injury occurred when the only three-time defensive player of the year, Lawrence Taylor, made the tackle. The next three-time defensive player of the year, the next guy to do it, J.J. Watt, caused the injury to Alex Smith. The injury for Theismann occurred around the 40-yard line. The injury to Smith occurred around the 40-yard line, and both of them were missing their Pro Bowl left tackles. I think that coincidence is eerie.
Did you ever have in class the speech when they would talk about the differences or the similarities similar to that? I mean, just it pops into my mind because it sounded kind of the same theme. The Kennedy and Lincoln assassinations, like Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln. Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy. You know, there was a lot of stuff like that. You probably Google it. There was a series of them. It was just like that. A lot of parallels, a lot of oddities that line up.
Vice president's last name Johnson that took over
exactly.
their deaths.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It's eerie.
Yeah, a lot of coincidental stuff. It is eerie.
So on the text line, 615-737-1025, if you want to weigh in on this, stats that are mind-blowing sports stats for you. Let's see. We got one. I mean, this is a well-known one, but it's true. Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak. And you think about that and how that's never going to happen again.
Unbelievable.
And then somebody said, my favorite mind-blowing stat with the Larry Fitzgerald one that Elijah threw out there. But then he said, since that one's been said, I think my favorite would be Joe Thomas' career consecutive snap streak of 10,343.
That one's tough.
That is pretty
awesome.
737-1025 if you want to get in there. How about this one that was on Twitter? Jerry Rice, 93 receptions at age 40. And nobody has ever had more than one reception in a season at age 40 or higher. And that's Tom Brady and Brett Favre, only because they were still playing quarterback at the time. And they each caught one. So wide receivers just don't play at 40. Jerry Rice had 93 receptions at age 40.
Wow. Tim has called in and wants to weigh in on this.
What's up, Tim? Fire away.
All right. I remember 2002, the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Texans. The Steelers outgained the Texans 416-47 in the yards category, but lost the game 24-6. Tommy Maddox had four turnovers, two pick sixes, and two fumbles.
Tommy Maddox, wow.
Yep.
Former that XFL quarterback.
Now that's pretty awesome right there. It is so wild when you have something like that happen. That's why you go to games, right? Sometimes you end up going to a game, you just never know what you're going to see, and that kind of thing happens, and you're like, I was at that game. You walk out of there going, that has never happened before, and I don't think we could ever see anything quite like that again. That's pretty amazing.
This is a different question for another day, but a game that you are actually in attendance where something bizarre or memorable happened.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a fun one.
There's one for next week right there.
Here's
one more. I got one more local one that I thought of, and I wish I had the game logs, you know, so I could look game by game. But I'm almost positive that this happened, and I was hoping to verify it, and I can't. David Price, this is how great he was in the 2007 baseball season for Vanderbilt. And remember, at this time, this was still the building process. This is really as Tim Corbin is starting to take the program to the next level with players like him. But this was the first real dominating season that they had as a group. In 2007, the team was number one pretty much the entire season and, of course, got upset in the regional, which is still stings to this day. But David Price, who was the player of the year, he swept all of the awards across college baseball, especially for pitchers. Think about the SEC and how hard it is to dominate in that league. All right, the SEC is not a beer league, right? Everybody is good. Everybody brings something to the table. Even the worst teams in the SEC are capable of winning a game here and there, you know, and upsetting the best team. David Price made every single start on the Friday night opener against the other team's best starter and went undefeated. They didn't lose a single game in that. Now, that is pretty hard to do. I don't know how many times that's been done by an SEC starter, but Price did it that year. That is a pretty mind-blowing stat.
Wow. Yeah, that is. That's a good one.
Because think about the top starter for every SEC team and how many of those guys end up going on to the big leagues. That's not easy to pull off, for sure.
I have a stat that I want to give out, but it's going to be a part of trivia, so I'm not going to do it.
Ah, well, you got to withhold that one.
I will point that out when I ask the question. Matthew wants to weigh in on this. Mind-blowing stats. Matthew, welcome in.
Yeah, my mind-blowing stat happened about 5 years ago. I'm a huge soccer fan. When Leicester City ended up winning the entire Barclays Premier League at that time at 5,000-1. Since then, they won't give you more than 1,000-1 odds on anything. So Leicester City went and broke that stat when they had a few people bet $5 on them, and the bettors went, oh, my goodness, this is bad. Huh. That's my crazy mind-blowing stat.
Give us a little more detail on that. Because I remember when that happened, I didn't understand. So how did they win the whole thing? Like they started upsetting everybody?
Yeah, basically they came in. Everybody thought that they were going to be the first ones relegated. Their brand new coach was going to be the first ones fired. And they just came in and played basically defensive soccer and had an amazingly fast goal scorer. And they just took it off from there and just pretty much surprised everybody. And then once people started figuring them out, it was too late and they were too far ahead and had too much momentum to have anybody stop them. So it was one of those true Cinderella stories because they came within a couple games of not even playing in that league the next year. Because in England, they do relegation and promotion.
Right.
So you might not be in the NFL if we have relegation and promotion here in the United States the next year if you're too bad.
So 5,000-1 were the odds.
Yep, 5,000-1. $10 on that would have made you a lot of money.
Now that would have been awesome to pull that off.
Yeah, I wish. Time machine, please.
Yeah, you need the what do you call it? The from Back to the Future.
Yeah, the DeLorean.
When you go 88 miles an hour. Yeah, the capacitator, the flex capacitator.
Flex
that's
capacitor,
what you need.
Yeah.
And Biff's sports almanac that they come up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been one. That, and there was a couple other bets you would have made that year at just $5 would have made you, I believe, somewhere in the north of seven digits. Wow. Just that, the Leicester City, and I think it was the UK leaving the European Union, and then Trump winning the election. I think all five of those at $5, or all three of those at $5, would have made you over $1 million, or even possibly over $10 million, if you would have just kept on rolling over.
Amazing, great stuff. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, no problem, man. Have a good one.
All right, Willie, we got a couple more that have called in. Let's go to Ramal, wants to weigh in on mind-blowing sports stats. Welcome in.
Afternoon, guys. One of the crazier stats that I've seen in my time, besides the Larry Fitzgerald one, I think that by far tops them all. But our boy Derrick Henry rushing for almost 1,000 yards in two games in high school. That is my
two games.
Wow.
5-10 in one game, 485 in another game. That's 995 yards in two games alone. He had 4,200 yards that season in his senior year with 55 touchdowns.
I wonder how many carries he had in each game to get that many yards.
I'm actually looking at it right now. The game that he had 510 yards, he carried 45 times. The game that he had 485, he carried 57 times.
Good
game. 9.2 his senior year. Yeah. Oh, it is insane.
So he
carried... Well, what was the scores of those games? Were they blowouts?
So the 5-10 game, they won 45-28. The 485 game, they won 41-26.
So they weren't complete annihilations. It wasn't like 76 to nothing.
Yeah, the three games they lost that season, he had 336 one game, he had 215 one game, and 317. So that's his high school year, man. It is something unbelievable.
That is awesome.
It was the offense.
Great stuff.
Yeah, yes, sir. I appreciate you guys. Take care.
I mean, think about that. That's carrying the ball 100 times over two games. It almost has 1,000 yards. That's amazing. That's whew. Let's go to Jack. Jack wants to weigh in.
Hey, guys. I've got a high school stat that you'll find interesting. Back in February of 1959, if you can go back that far, before there was a three-point line, a teammate of mine had 25 points at halftime of a basketball game. And the coach said the state record for scoring is 51 points. If we want to feed Bobby, and his name is Bobby Langley, the ball, he can probably get the state record. And we were winning pretty handily, so we did. But at the end of the third quarter, Bobby had 39 points. So he took off on the fourth quarter, and in 6 minutes he scored 30 points, no three-point line, 30 points in 6 minutes. For a total of 69, the coach took him out for the last 2 minutes.
Good grief.
He took him out for the last 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man. He might as well take it all the way to the end.
Yeah, he had 80 points if he let him play the whole game.
Jeez.
So no three-point line.
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't
great
stop.
Stuff.
He was shooting it from everywhere. They had the other team knew what we were doing. They had like three guys guarding him, and nobody could stop him. And he's a 5'11", 6-foot guard, but he could shoot it like crazy. And he was in the age when it was very unusual to have somebody could use, you know, handle the ball with both hands and go any direction. And he had a little Iverson kind of a ability to shake people loose, and he just killed it.
Wow. Great call. Stood, thanks a lot for joining in.
That record stood for probably, I'm going to say, 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah, not surprising.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Jack.
Pretty good. And if you want, thanks a lot, Jack. And if you want to look at this, go to Peter Burns on Twitter, and you can go down this rabbit hole and just read one after another all of these things. We've mentioned a few of them, but we haven't even scratched the surface on all of them. Some of them are tongue-in-cheek, but... there's a lot of good ones that we won't even have time to mention today. Jack brings up one, and it brings to mind Pete Maravich averaging 44 points a game in college with no three-point line. And he was a guard, right? He certainly could have shot a lot of threes. So that's pretty mind-boggling.
I've tweeted it out from 102.5 The Game.
Awesome. All right, we got to wrap this up because we get on to our next one, which will be you just made the list. So we'll move on to the second half of the program in just a moment. Thanks for participating. And don't forget trivia coming up at 1 o'clock, and maybe this is whet your appetite for that. We'll have prizes to give out. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.